This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Fiction workers have to work hard to create authentic worlds and to suspend disbelief. Some go through the painstaking task of inventing entirely new languages, like the two forms of Elvish used throughout J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. Michael Adams is a professor of English at Indiana University and editor of From Elvish to Klingon, a collection of essays that explores the variety, the history, and purposes of the world's invented languages. Michael Adams, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Well, thanks so much, Virginia.
Title is a little misleading because there is so much more than the fantasy-based languages like Elvish and Klingon. Is this a popular appeal we're going for?
Well, I can't speak for the press. I think that's probably true. And I think that those are the languages that people latch on to, probably not so much Cornish or a revitalized language like Hawaiian or something like that. So Elvish to Klingon signals what the general idea of the book is. The subtitle is Exploring Invented Languages, and that's probably a little more accurate about what the book intends.
And in your exploration, you write about the need for invented language arising from a dissatisfaction with current linguistic states of affairs. So what are creators of new languages trying to fix?
They can fix a lot of different things, or attempt to fix a lot of different things. Take Elvish that you were just playing. Is the language we've got as beautiful as a language could be, or as expressive as a language could be? Tolkien thought he could come up with something which, for his fictional purposes, would be even more expressive than natural languages. And he was not against natural languages. He loved English and studied it as a scholar. But maybe you could go one step further, or in the interest of better communication and world peace, you'd come up with a language like Esperanto, or you are trying to recapture your heritage and you revitalize a language like Neo-Breton or Cornish so that you can sort of go back to your roots in the language.
And of course, if you add pan flutes and a chorus of oohs and ahs, that makes it even more beautiful, as in the film.
I suppose in some cases it does.
Well, there have been, you mentioned Esperanto. This is an effort to create a universal tongue, something that crosses political and cultural boundaries. They're actually called international auxiliary languages, most popular of which was Esperanto. Let's hear a little.
Yep.
Mia filo havas hamstron, la hamstro nomijas Fred.
That translates into, my son has a hamster. His hamster's name is Fred. Esperanto really had its heyday in the early 20th century. Do people still speak it today?
They do. The estimates are wildly varying because it's difficult to know exactly what counts as fluency. One fellow, Sidney Colbert, who's an Esperantist himself, and that's worth keeping in mind, estimated from a pretty scientific survey, 1 to 2 million speakers of Esperanto worldwide today. And you have to consider, you know, there are lots of national languages that don't have 1 to 2 million speakers and lots of endangered languages that have many fewer than that. So it's a considerable number still. There were more speakers than that, probably closer to 10 million in the first decade of the 20th century.
How about do we know about Elvish and Klingon? Like, how many people speak those languages?
There are some people who do. Neither is like Esperanto to the extent that there are natural Esperanto speakers, people who have Esperanto as one of their first languages in the home, who raised their children to speak it, you know, right from the point at which they acquire language. There are some Esperanto families, not so many Klingon or Elvish families. Probably the best estimate for Klingon is maybe 3 or 4 dozen speakers who are really fluent. But that doesn't, you know, count the people who have some facility with the language and could try to carry on a conversation with it. Elvish, I have no idea right now, though there are examples of schools using it as a way of getting children interested in language to learn a little bit of Elvish or something.
And probably a lot more Lord of the Rings-associated tattoos than Esperanto.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been consulted on some of those tattoos as to their accuracy, and I have to say I don't really know. You'd have to ask somebody who was really a student of Tolkien's languages. But it's clear that it has an iconic value to people, regardless of whether they can actually speak the languages.
Well, let's talk about George Orwell's Newspeak. This is the party language of the fictional superstate Oceania in 1984. Now, in one essay, the writer Howard Jackson, he reminds us that it was really barely used in the novel, yet has such a lasting effect on our consciousness.
Yeah, no, it's one of the few invented languages that's given us words in English, like doublespeak, for instance. Which actually I don't think is an element of Newspeak, but is clearly formed on the basis of the Newspeak example. It's a very small amount of the text is devoted to it, and if you think of other literary examples, even Tolkien's Lord of the Rings or Anthony Burgess's Clockwork Orange, the languages, the invented languages, play a relatively minor role in the whole text, but they suggest the flavor of another culture, if you want to look at it like that. Mm. And that's enough for most readers, and expresses that dissatisfaction you were talking about and the remedy for that dissatisfaction, even if it's not played out ultimately to a complete language.
We're exploring the world of invented language with linguist Michael Adams. He's also the editor of a volume of essays on the topic. It's called From Elvish to Klingon, Exploring Invented Languages. There is also an essay on revitalized languages. You mentioned one earlier, but this, like reconstructed Aramaic, this is what was spoken in Mel Gibson's 2004 cinematic passion play, The Passion of the Christ.
Right.
Rezemekal Paim, Athirde.
Le Rezemekal Kidna. Shokan Elaya, Karsi Wan Elayan. Laob Datepain.
Sorry to cut you off there, but what?
No, that's all right. I didn't realize you were going to do a clip. There are a half a million speakers or so of modern Aramaic, and I'm not sure the degree to which that's had to be reconstructed for them to speak it. I think that's largely a historical language, but there may be some reconstruction involved in bringing it up to date in the same way that modern Hebrew, a language that hadn't been spoken for a very long time by many people, had to be brought into the 21st century in order to describe the conditions of the way we live now.
I was thinking that you also, in that essay, is also Hawaiian. So what are some of the terms that cannot be expressed using the lost and found language? Let's put it like that.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in Hawaiian, and it's tough for me to pull out particular examples, but Hawaiian's an interesting case because, American colonialism really left its print on Hawaii, and people who are trying to revitalize Hawaiian culture and Hawaiian language resist borrowing American terms for things. So all kinds of items we use in the modern world that have English words attached to them, I'm going to say toaster, and maybe toaster isn't one of these words, really. But names for things that even European languages will pick up from English, Hawaiian resists that and has to come up with a metaphorical way from Hawaiian elements to say what that thing is, sometimes coming up with a phrase instead of a single word in order to get at this new artifact that needs to be named.
One of the essayists, also James Portnow, he writes about a natural affinity between video games and language. What tell us more about that?
Well, it's partly what you were saying earlier on. You try to invent a world, and people have to enter that world and suspend disbelief in it. And if it's truly another world, surely it's going to have a different language, right, from the one we speak every day. And that means, again, that there has to be at least the flavor of a distinction between language in the game and the language that a player is using in everyday life. And so, again, these are very rarely game languages, fully articulated languages in the way that Tolkien's Elvish is fully articulated, or even Klingon is fully articulated, with dictionaries and a grammar and all that kind of stuff. But they've got enough language to say, you're not in your world, you're in this new fictional world. And that seems to satisfy game players a lot. It is apparently really essential to the quality of the gameplay.
So we've got a minute left. I'm interested in, rather than entering into a world, language is a kind of exclusive world, like the computer language, LEET. It's kind of like a sophisticated pig Latin for hackers.
It started out that way, and the hackers, who were very elite, and that's where elite comes from, dropped it pretty quickly when they realized other people were imitating them, people who weren't as elite as they. It's typical of any type of slang or jargon that we're not just saying who's included in the language, but who's excluded from it. And LEET performs a sort of slang function in that way and says who's in and who's out.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael Adams.
It's been my pleasure.
He's a professor of English at Indiana University and editor of the journal American Speech and the book From Elvish to Klingon, Exploring Invented Languages. You can find much more about his work written in plain old English at wordofmathradio.org. And we're going to go into this break listening to a fan version of the Klingon victory song, which first appeared, of course, in Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, we found this version by the group Il Troubadore, posted where else? On YouTube. Speaking of amateurs, coming up, we're going to be talking about amateurism in America. We're going to talk to a writer who's celebrating our heritage as a nation of garage tinkerers and basement inventors. That's when Word of Mouth continues in just a moment.
Oh,